Well, good evening. Welcome to the Jim Bohannon Show from Westwood One Radio. We're at 1-866-50-JIMBO, 1-866-505-4626, and on the web, you will find us at jimbotalk.net. Earlier this year, we had the story brought to you by freelance journalist Joshua Kurz of Army Specialist John Town, injured in Iraq and then denied benefits when he was given a diagnosis of a previously unknown personality disorder, not necessarily related, it would seem, to the rocket that just about killed him when it exploded. Town is one of the thousands of veterans who have filed suit against the Veterans Administration, claiming mistreatment and misdiagnosis on numerous fronts. The suit contends the VA failed to provide prompt disability benefits, failed to add staff to reduce wait times for medical care, and failed to improve services for this war's signature disability, post-traumatic stress disorder. And the lawsuit also accused the VA of deliberately cheating some veterans, such as Specialist Town, by allegedly working with the Pentagon to misclassify PTSD claims as these pre-existing personality disorders to avoid paying benefits. Well, Joshua Kurz joins us tonight as he has updated this situation and what Congress, led by Missouri Senator Kit Bond, is doing about it. Joshua, good to have you back on the program tonight.
Good to be with you, Jim.
For those who missed that first show, just a bit of background on Specialist John Town and what happened to him. Then we'll get into what's happened since that first article.
Absolutely. John Town served in Ramadi, Iraq. He was a specialist and was almost killed by a rocket that knocked him unconscious. He suffered severe injuries, lost a significant portion of his hearing, and won the Purple Heart for his wounds. But when it came time to discharge him, his Army doctor decided that his deafness was actually caused by this pre-existing personality disorder. And discharging him that way, they were able to deny him disability and medical benefits for the rest of his life. And Jim, one of the details that you and I spoke about earlier was the provision about giving back your signing bonus for the years that you're too wounded to serve, so that John Town, like thousands of wounded veterans nowadays, found out on his final day in uniform he actually owed the Army several thousand dollars.
That is, again, just unbelievable. Every time I hear this story told, I'm just astounded at the gall of people to say, well, we're sorry, in the service of your country, your warranty has expired. Remarkable to treat our troops like cattle for whatever reason.
Warranty is a fantastic word. In this follow-up article, which will be published this week in The Nation, I speak with doctors who talk about soldiers being treated precisely like demolished products in their offices, fit to be thrown out. They said misdiagnoses of this personality disorder were rampant. And one told me he was pressured by superiors to purposely misdiagnose wounded soldiers.
Was he given a reason?
No. No, I think everything is understood. And it's a very top-down structure. You follow orders.
Well, I understand that, but of course, in this particular case, there are such things as unlawful orders, of course, and presumably lying and committing, I suppose, a form of perjury when you are a medical doctor and you sign your name to forms that you know are incorrectly filled out. It seems to me that at least is borderline perjury. Presumably, when you are given orders that are, at the very least, borderline unlawful orders, and every soldier knows what that means, even if you are a doctor first and a soldier second in your own mind, when that happens, an explanation ought to be in order. Certainly, it's not easy to tell someone, sorry, sir, that's an unlawful order, but I would think that at least you would summon up an explanation is, you know, this would appear to be an unlawful order, sir. Could you explain to me why I am supposed to falsify this diagnosis?
Well, I think for a lot of these doctors, it's understood. The savings and other factors are so obvious. Talk about it simply in a financial perspective first. by cheating these wounded veterans out of a lifetime of disability and medical benefits, the military is set to save about $12.5 billion in disability and medical care. Actually, one of the doctors I spoke to said that that's a gross underestimate. Those figures come from a Harvard study by Professor Linda Bilmes, did an extensive job in looking into precisely what this war is going to cost. He said that if all the soldiers at his Army hospital were properly diagnosed, the cost for treating them would be exponentially larger. As it is with personality disorder, they can say the wounds they suffered were pre-existing, and they can shuffle them out the door in about 5 days.
Well, two things about that. Number one, clearly, if that's the cost, then that's the cost. It is a cost that must be borne. You don't just look for ways to cheat people. And second, assuming that you are totally shorn of anything approaching morality, which would seem to apply in the case of many of the people you've written about here, there is a very serious practical bottom line. We do not have a draft in this country. We refuse to share the burdens. We treat our soldiers as mercenaries. We are so glad they are out there defending us, not that we would ever dirty our hands and shed our blood to do that. But do we expect people to keep lining up to do this if we treat them this way? I've got news for you. Somebody has to actually agree to go in harm's way. And this is not a way to guarantee a continued flow of volunteers.
Well, many of the doctors I spoke to were precisely of that mindset. One was extremely frustrated that his fellow doctors were going along with this pressure. But, Jim, the other folks I spoke to, they're just of a different mindset. I think of Colonel Stephen Knorr, the chief of behavioral health at Fort Carson's Evans Army Hospital. That's the base where Specialist Town served. He had a memo which he posted on his bulletin board to advise the doctors under his care. And what he said to the doctors is, don't trust the symptoms that your soldiers report to you. As he put it, we're not so naive as to believe everything soldiers tell us. He also advised his doctors to dismiss sick soldiers as quick as possible. As he put it, get rid of dead wood.
What's this person's name again?
Colonel Stephen Knorr. And would you believe, he played a central role in the national review of this. It wasn't just about Fort Carson or about Johnstown. When the Surgeon General, Gail Pollack, was presented with a stack of personality disorder cases, she said she'd review it. They took 5 months and reported that after a thoughtful and thorough review, they had decided that all of the cases, including Johnstown, whose deafness was caused by personality disorder, they decided that all of those cases were properly diagnosed. But I did a touch more reporting, and I found out that in the 5 months they were reviewing these cases for their thoughtful and thorough review, they didn't speak to anybody. Surgeon General Pollack didn't talk to a single person, not even the soldiers whose cases she was reviewing. All she did do is go back to one of the doctors who produced these false diagnoses and said, hey, did you get it right the first time? The doctor said, yep, we did. And they terminated the review at that point. Now, the Surgeon General denied that fact for a long time, saying that there were a panel of health experts and independent doctors who were reviewing these. But with a few more months of reporting, it turned out there wasn't a panel, and they weren't independent. The sole reviewer was Colonel Stephen Knorr, the man who advised his doctors to get rid of dead wood. I don't think the veterans groups who were eyeing the situation at that point saw it as much of a coincidence that Knorr approved of his own diagnoses.
Well, it's nice to know we had an independent evaluation anyway.
Yes.
More to come as we speak with the journalist Joshua Kors, who again threw open this story earlier in the year, and now in the latest issue of The Nation, you can read more about just what is being done and where the fight goes at this juncture. We're at 1-866-50-JIMBO. 1-866-505-4626. We'd love to hear from all of you, especially any dead wood. We'll be right back after these messages. Welcome back to the Jim Bohannon Show at 1-866-50-JIMBO, 1-866-505-4626. We're talking with freelance journalist Joshua Coors, who is investigation of the way in which the military is treating some of our wounded veterans. First exploded onto the scene earlier this year. Now the latest issue of The Nation magazine has the follow-up to that. And we have a call from Ian in Fayetteville, North Carolina. Ian, good evening.
Good evening, gentlemen. Sir, just what percentage of these cases were they on behavior modification drugs as children?
That's a good question. The soldiers I've looked at in the 12 months I've been reporting on this, all of them are documented as perfectly healthy before serving in Iraq. By definition, a personality disorder has to be a long-standing, pre-existing condition. None of the soldiers I've seen, and I've looked at dozens of cases, have any psychological history at all. But who these 22,500 soldiers are, whether any of them took medications beforehand, we really don't know at this point. A lot of those records are being kept tight by the military. They're not releasing them for privacy reasons.
All right, 1-866-50-JIMBO is our number, 1-866-505-4626 on the Bohannon Show. Have you had any kind of what you would call official cooperation at all? I mean, let's face it, you are inquiring about the health and welfare of the nation's military. Surely at some point, somebody should say, okay, Mr. Coors, here's this, 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 and this, and just maybe open a few doors, grease a few skids, cut some red tape for you.
I have had some open doors, and I think of two levels. First, as we spoke before about the doctors, one of the doctors talked to me about how the cases I'd looked at, clear-cut as they were, really were just the tip of the iceberg. He mentioned one case to me about a soldier who returned from Iraq with a chunk missing from his leg. His doctors pressured him to diagnose that as personality disorder. We think about the VA as well, a separate organization that has the task of classifying these soldiers. One top official at that organization stepped forward to speak to me and told me how they are furious with this personality disorder scandal, because with these false diagnoses, not only are they denied disability and medical benefits, but wounded soldiers are supposed to pass through the medical board, and it short-circuits the VA's red flag system. That's what the VA's informal term for the way in which they try to identify the most wounded soldiers and get them immediate care. If a soldier goes through the medical board and receives a high rating for his disability, the VA knows he's very wounded, and they flag him, bringing him to immediate care. But those with a false diagnosis of personality disorder get slipped out the side. Not only are they denied benefits, but they're denied the opportunity to be seen by a medical board. And as a result, they fly under the radar of the VA, get dumped into the stack of 60,000 cases that are waiting to be processed by that organization. And that's why in cases like John Town, he had to wait 8 months simply to see a doctor. This VA official was very frustrated by that and said if they don't send wounded soldiers through their medical boards, there's no way we can keep our eye out for them.
This is just appalling in the extreme. The treatment that has been accorded here, are you able in your investigation to differentiate the fault, such as it is, that is at the feet of the Veterans Administration as opposed to the Pentagon, which are, of course, two separate entities, two separate parts of the U.S. government, even though they both deal with soldiers?
They both have their problems. They really do. In my experience, the VA is slightly better. I've seen a lot of cases of soldiers who received no disability rating, or just, say, 10% later with the exact same symptoms went to the VA and were deemed to be 100% disabled. But a lot of it, you'll be disappointed to know, simply depends on who you know. I think of one case of a soldier who ran over a young girl in Iraq, and as a result of that traumatic experience crushing this young girl in his Humvee, he began to be haunted by her mangled ghost. The young girl was about the age of his young daughter, and these schizophrenic-type delusions continued, so much so that he could no longer function. Well, the Army slipped him out with a personality disorder, no medical treatment, no disability pay. But when he went to the VA, due to some friends he had inside the VA structure in Washington, a prominent filmmaker he knew who had some high-ranking contacts, they were able to get that case reversed after a few years of fighting. But most soldiers without those contacts really aren't that lucky.
What about their members of Congress? Everybody has a member of Congress.
Some members of Congress have woken up to this and taken action.
Obviously, Senator Kit Bond of Missouri has to be in the forefront.
He is. And on the House side, Congressman Bob Filner has called congressional hearings. I testified at those hearings, as did John Towne. He told them what it was like to win a Purple Heart and be denied benefits. And they were appalled, Democrat and Republican alike. The response was so strong that the House drew up a bill which matches the bill produced by Barack Obama and Kit Bond. In both of these bills, there's an immediate freeze on all personality disorder discharges until the scandal can be worked out. But, Jim, I'm regretful to say that bill is floundering because there simply has been no public support and very limited awareness within Congress.
What is the HR number, if you will? Do you have that handy?
I sure do. In the House side, it's called HR 3167, and on the Senate side, it's called S1817. Barack Obama and Kit Bond were not ready to say die, and so what they did is they recrafted it as an amendment and put it onto the Pentagon spending bill, which was approved last week. The disappointing part is just how weakened that amendment was. Instead of putting a freeze on these discharges to stop this from happening, all the amendment does is require another review by Surgeon General Gail Pollack, sort of like letting the fox run the hen house once again.
Well, under these circumstances, it would so seem. We're going to continue our discussion with journalist Joshua Kors. Again, check out the latest issue of The Nation magazine, also his website, joshuakors.com, joshuakors.com. And again, those two bills are H.R. 3167 and S1817. We'll come back with some more calls at 1-866-50-JIMBO, 1-866-505-4626 on The Jimbo Hannon Show as we talk about the shoddy treatment of our wounded veterans. We'll be back. Welcome back to the Jimbo Hannon Show. We're at 1-866-50-JIMBO, 1-866-505-4626, talking with Joshua Kors, freelance journalist, the man who came across the incredible story of Army Specialist John Towne, wounded in Iraq and denied benefits because of some really trumped-up excuses by our government, your taxpayers, your tax dollars at work here. And before we take some more calls here, again, I'll repeat the number of those bills and tell us, if you would, what these bills would do.
Sure. Congressman Hare's bill in the House, H.R. 3167, and Barack Obama and Kit Bond's bill in the Senate, S1817. What they do is put a freeze on these discharges until the matter can be sorted out. The only exception it makes is one that seems logical enough, one in which the soldier lies about his condition before coming in. But it's worth noting that in the 12 months I've been reporting on this story, every single soldier really had the same story. They were perfectly healthy enough to pass the screening that allowed them into the military, healthy again as deemed in a second review before being deployed to Iraq. It's only when they come back from Iraq wounded and seek benefits that the pre-existing condition is discovered.
Yeah. I was going to say, I never got stuck with a pre-existing condition, but I was in the Army, and they check you out. I mean, there isn't an orifice they don't examine thoroughly and a few new ones that they manage to make. And likewise, once again, when I was deployed to Vietnam, it was thorough. A little intrusive, but I must say at the time I thought, well, at least by golly, I know I seem to be in pretty good shape. But this is remarkable. Only after it's going to start costing the government money do these pre-existing conditions suddenly jump out of the woodwork.
And those in the veterans groups who want to buy the Army's logic has questioned it on that level and said, wait a minute, if these guys really did have a personality disorder and were too ill to serve from their very first day, how was it that, like John Towne, they served for many years earning a dozen medals before the pre-existing condition was discovered? It just doesn't make sense.
Gotta wonder. 1-866-50-JIMBO. Here's William in Richmond, Virginia. Good evening.
How you doing, sir?
We're well, thank you.
I served three tours in Iraq with the Marine Corps Infantry. I saw quite a bit of action, but there were some headquarters units who never got the occasion to leave the forward operating base. And once we returned back, a lot of these individuals were making claims to the VA. They're now receiving benefits from the VA. I'm wondering, obviously something's broken about the screening process. How would you try to fix it where people who don't deserve the money aren't granted the opportunity to receive the benefits?
It's a good question. Congressman Filner had an idea that's very much like paying your taxes. The assumption that the soldiers are going to correctly report their wounds, and to keep people honest, they could audit rather than demanding that every soldier go through such a rigorous process simply to get the benefits they need right away. They can't wait the 6 months it takes to go through the medical board hearing. And, Jim, another point of that that's really disturbed the veterans groups is not only the wait time, but how elaborate the application is. We're talking about dozens and dozens of pages. A soldier with severe brain damage from his service in Iraq doesn't have the mental capacity to fill out pages like that. They need a tremendous amount of help. If family's not there to give it to them, they can't fill out the forms to get the benefits they need.
1-866-50-JIMBO is our number, 1-866-50-54626. And, well, let's see here. All right. I managed to lose both callers in the process. Sorry about that. 1-866-50-JIMBO. If the previous caller would call us back, we'd love to get you back on. 1-866-505-4626 on the Jimbo Hannon Show as we talk with Joshua Coors this evening. The situation now in terms of the government response with all of the negative publicity, has the story changed any, or are they sticking to their guns?
Well, the Army certainly hasn't changed the story, and that's one of the most dramatic aspects of this coverage. One might have thought they would have said, these allegations are false, this is absurd. Not to be. Certain General Gail Pollack refused to speak to me, and when I collaborated with Bob Woodruff for the Nightline report that we produced, she refused to speak to us then as well. When Bob Filner called her to testify at the hearings he held about personality disorder, she refused to show up then as well, but she did send her psychological consultant, Colonel Bruce Crow. And when Crow got there, Filner posed to him precisely your question. You have these 22,500 soldiers being denied a lifetime of benefits because they're being purposely misdiagnosed by doctors in the Army. This is a serious allegation. Don't you have anything to say? And Crow pretty much looked back at him blank-faced and said, well, if it is true, boy, that would be bad. And
that's Filner, it?
That was it. Filner was furious. To pacify him, the Surgeon General representative said that they would do this, do another review with another stack of cases reviewed by Surgeon General Pollack. And at that point, you would have thought Filner was about to explode. He yelled at him and said, don't you realize your first review was fraudulent? you think we're going to trust you again to do the exact same thing? You know, the weakened amendment that we spoke about a moment ago, in it, just like the current system, the review does not include interviewing the soldiers whose cases they were reviewing. I spoke to the Surgeon General's office about this, and her officials told me the reason they didn't want to interview soldiers is because they didn't think soldiers would have any medically valid information to share
about
their
cases. Knowing how they feel, knowing what they've done, knowing how they've been diagnosed. Obviously, the patient always knows something.
Well, you know, perhaps the patient would have known if he had one leg before serving, or in John's case, whether he was deaf before joining the Army.
Maybe so. Well, in other words, it would appear, based on what you have been reporting here, that we're talking about a case of terminal arrogance and about some careers that need to be terminated.
Well, that's another aspect of it. By staying silent and keeping as far away from the attention as possible, absolutely nobody has been held responsible for any of these discharges. Not Surgeon General Gail Pollack, who led the cover-up, not Colonel Stephen Knorr, who guided the phony review, not even the doctor who diagnosed Specialist Town with personality disorder, Dr. Mark Wexler of Fort Carson.
1-866-50-JIMBO. This is Connie in Aberdeen, Washington. Good evening, Connie.
Hello.
Yes.
My question is how long has the VA known about this, and why is it just now coming out, not sooner?
That's a fantastic question. You know, in the 12 months I've been working on this, I've received calls from soldiers as far back as Vietnam saying, boy, thanks for doing this. This happened to me 20 years ago. And nobody was there to stand up and report about it. My hunch is that many inside the VA and the Army have known about this for a long time, just no one stumbled upon this issue or really investigated at this depth.
How nice to know. Thank you, Connie. That's remarkable. I was going to say it would have to be assumed that this issue didn't just suddenly pop up just so Joshua Kors could find it. That it must have been there for some time. They're remarkable. Vietnam, a generation of soldiers, presumably. Therefore, granted, there wasn't much in the way of wounding taking place between those two, although, of course, there was Panama, Grenada. There were some smaller actions. Do we have any indication, for example, of the people, say, wounded in Panama who might have been treated in this way? I'm just curious.
It's an excellent question. Her question reminds me, too, of my conversation with Dr. Frank Ochberg, the doctor who codified post-traumatic stress disorder for the government. And he told me that the situation now, in many ways, is actually better, because back then there was no PTSD. So either you got a fraudulent diagnosis of personality disorder or nothing. There was no alternative. He said at least now there are a handful of soldiers who can refute that discharge, stay, fight it, and win. Back then, there really wasn't a victory to be had.
More calls to come. We're at 1-866-50-JIMBO, 1-866-505-4626. Can wounds be somehow misdiagnosed as personality disorders? We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Jimbo Hannon Show at 1-866-50-JIMBO, 1-866-505-4626. Here's John in the Funiac Springs, Florida. Welcome to the program.
Yes, sir. I'm calling. Is there any kind of investigation committee inside the Veterans Administration to show some equality for the combat wounded troops returning that are fighting the system for 8 months to a year versus folks who have not seen combat and get handed their compensations the day they walk out of the military, like Joe Metzger and whatnot?
That's a good question. I don't know what the investigative mechanism inside the VA is. I know right now there's simply a lot of hubbub about how they're going to deplete those waiting cases. I think you'd have to be a very well-connected individual to walk in one day and leave that day with an immediate diagnosis and decision. That simply hasn't been the way it's worked for the soldiers I've been looking at this past year.
Mm-hmm. 1-866-50-JIMBO, 1-866-50-5-4-6-2-6.
But I should add,
Okay.
That's actually precisely the point with the red flag system that we spoke about before. The idea of that system is to take the most severely wounded soldiers and plunk them right into the front of the line so they could potentially walk in and walk out very quickly with a diagnosis and benefits. These are soldiers who are being lost in the midst because they're not flagged as wounded, because they've also been denied an opportunity to be seen by a medical board.
Here is Robert in Hope Mills, North Carolina. Good evening.
Good evening, folks. How you doing?
We're well.
Yes, sir. I hope you folks don't think I'm crazy. Let me. I have thrown away tons of stuff that I've been on the internet about this post-traumatic stress disorder.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Mr. Cord, some reason or other, they're cramming this PTSD down the returning members' throats. They're treating all the combat troops when they come back as being having post-traumatic stress disorder.
Well, not everybody is treated
yes,
as having it.
Yes, sir. And they're actually begging the troops to put claims in. And this is what I throwed away. They're begging the troops to claim this post-traumatic stress disorder.
They who is doing it?
That's what I had. I had all this stuff written down, and I throwed it away because nobody's paid any attention
to it. Well,
you
say they. I mean, it shouldn't be that hard off the top of your head to tell us who they
is. It's in the military medical system.
Why would anybody in the military medical system be begging people to put in for this sort of thing?
Well, that's what's not making any sense to me.
Well, I would certainly agree with you on that score, sir.
Okay. No,
it does not seem to make any sense. But I believe this way, if you can actually add some documentation to make it believable to the rest of us, feel free.
Bohannon.
Yes.
Sir, I'm not trying to pull your leg. I had all this stuff. Nobody paid any attention to me. Everybody said I'm nuts. They are fixing.
Who is they? Again, you keep referring
to military.
To
the military, under the request of Congress, is fixing to dump 60,000 to 80,000 records of the military of anybody who has been diagnosed with post-traumatic stress disorder.
Well, I can only ask our guest to offer any comments he may have.
I don't think I have a comment on that. That certainly hasn't been the information I've uncovered.
Okay, very well. Well, if you ever find that information, why, be sure to let us know. Zach in Waterloo, Iowa. Good evening.
Hi, how are you guys?
We're well, thank you.
I'm a recent graduate of the University of Northern Iowa, and I served 4 years on a volunteer fire department as an EMT firefighter. Certainly never saw anything as bad as some of the guys coming home from the war, but I'm familiar with the hierarchy of the medical system, especially lengthy paperwork. The question I have for the guests is, what can Americans do to not infiltrate, but to affect what I can only imagine is a very elaborate hierarchy within the military medical system and within Congress and the Senate to, if they're outraged about this, to see that something makes it all the way to the top and actually see some change to actually make an effect on the process?
It's a great question. Right now, Congress is waiting for pressure from their constituents. A lot of members in Congress still don't know about this. There really is a growing understanding, but let's look at the Dole family, for example, simply to highlight that question. Elizabeth Dole, conservative senator, saw this as such a terribly pressing issue, a crisis really, that she joined with 30 other senators all the way across the spectrum to write a letter to the Secretary of Defense demanding that he investigate my reporting on personality disorder. But yet, right across the hall, Bob Dole, her husband, who is now head of the Dole-Shalala Commission on Treating Wounded Soldiers, he said that thing with the personality disorder, the 22,500 soldiers, that's really nothing at all. So even with that one family, there's a division about what to do about this.
Bob Dole, a wounded soldier, is dismissing this as not a big deal?
That's exactly right. But his wife, the senator, was so concerned, she wrote a letter to the Secretary of Defense.
I'm amazed that anybody could dismiss this, but certainly not a man who suffered grievous wounds.
And that's been very disappointing for so many veterans. As the head of this commission, he was really in a position to help so many by highlighting this and giving a guideline on how to make changes. Instead, he really just turned his back on the issue.
Very odd. All right, more to come. We'll be right back here at Westwood One. Welcome back to the Jim Bohannon Show as we talk with Joshua Coors, freelance journalist. His latest article about this situation with our veterans appears in The Nation magazine. And we are at 1-866-50-JIMBO. Are you at all optimistic? Is the message being heard? I have not, for example, heard any presidential candidate pick up on this yet.
Well, that could come. As I mentioned, Barack Obama was so moved
by this. Of course, he co-sponsored the thing with Senator Bond, but yet he may be doing that as a senator. Has he trumpeted this as a presidential candidate?
And that's the question. I've spoken with his office several times, and an interview with him may be upcoming as a third part in this series. But right now, everyone's eyes are on Surgeon General Pollack. As you'll recall, with the Walter Reed scandal, the Pentagon took two actions. They pressed for the resignation of Surgeon General Kevin Kiley, and they hired the public relations firm LMW Strategies with a $100,000 no-bid contract to put a positive spin on the scandal. How they're going to react as this comes more into the public, that's anybody's guess.
Well, one would certainly guess that it's anybody's guess. Officially, has the administration said anything? I realize that the high-level federal officials have, to some extent, spoken, or in some cases just arrogantly refused to speak. But has anyone at what might be considered to be the policy-making level of this administration spoken out?
I think the short answer is no. And that in itself has been a source of concern for so many veterans. You'll recall with Walter Reed, Bush came down to the hospital, stood right in front of the microphone and said, never again. But here we have tens of thousands of wounded soldiers being denied a lifetime of benefits. He hasn't said a single word.
Where do you go from here?
Well, I'm going to continue reporting about the life of these two bills, and we'll see what happens with the amendment. I'm also hoping to get that interview with Barack Obama.
And John Towne, how is he doing?
John Towne's doing better now that the benefits have come. That's been great. His family was on the verge of bankruptcy. At one point, they had to shut off their telephone because they couldn't afford a phone. Weeks later, when the case got reversed following the media attention, they received a check for $20,000 and were able to start putting their life together. But as anybody with serious injuries knows, that's just the first step. This is a man who's had a pounding...
Well, we're going to have to pause. Briefly, stay on the line. Joshua Coors, and again, The Nation magazine. This is Westwood One. Hello and welcome to the Jim Bohannon Show at Westwood One Radio. We're at 1-866-50-JIMBO, 1-866-505-4626, and on the web at jimbotalk.net. If you're just joining us, we're talking with freelance journalist Joshua Coors, who tells the story of Army Specialist John Towne, wounded in Iraq, but then later treated by the military as though he had not been wounded. He gets a Purple Heart, but also has the effects of his wounding dismissed as a pre-existing personality disorder, one which somehow failed to show up in all of the examinations that the Army gives people, both coming into the service and entering a combat zone. And, you may have heard about this before. What Mr. Coors is back doing tonight is giving us the update on where we stand at the moment, to include lawsuits that have been filed and also some resolutions in Congress which have been introduced. And we will tell you more about those particular bills as well as we continue our discussion. As the previous hour had wrapped up, we had been curious about the subject of how this whole story, how it began, the subject of that specialist John Towne of the U.S. Army, and how he is in fact doing today. How is he doing?
He's doing better. I speak with him regularly. And He's very happy that because of the media attention, his case has gotten reversed, and he's now getting full benefits from the VA. But on a personal level, you think of anybody with a pounding headache that's gone on now over 3 years. It's bound to drive even the most sane person a little crazy. He's doing the best he can to take care of his two young children and keep the family afloat, even though at this point, he's still too ill to hold a job.
Really?
Really.
Wow. What exactly happened to him? For those who haven't read the story, he was in Iraq when this rocket went off. Give us a graphic account of what actually happened to this man.
There was a rocket attack. A 107-millimeter rocket exploded 2 feet above his head, blew him backwards into the office building amongst the stack of rubble. When he woke up, he thought he was dead. He had profuse bleeding from his ears. The majority of his hearing was gone, and following that, he's had not just the deafness, but confusion, anger problems, memory issues, all the things that one would associate with traumatic brain injury.
So the military gives him a Purple Heart, but at what stage did this pre-existing condition suddenly kick in, at the stage at which Specialist John Towne might suddenly cost the military and the Veterans Administration money? Is that when it suddenly appeared?
That's right, and that's why Towne's case really highlights the absurdity of the 22,500 soldiers who were in his shoes. To give him a Purple Heart, to say he was wounded in war, but then to say that he wasn't wounded in war, the absurdity, the contradiction there is right there on its face.
Beyond that, the attitude that the Army seems to be taking here, I'm curious if you have found any similar stories that have existed in the other services. Granted, most of the recent wounds in war have occurred in the Army and the Marine Corps. We haven't had a lot of Navy or Air Force casualties, which is a good thing. We tried to differentiate between the Veterans Administration and the Pentagon. You indicated you thought the VA was perhaps doing a somewhat better job in all of this. What about the Army as opposed to the Marine Corps?
Well, I can't say I haven't gotten any Marine cases. I have gotten one recently from the Navy. But I'll tell you, I've been working on this story for 12 months now, receiving Army cases. I feel like I could work on this the rest of my life if I went branch by branch. The story really is that deep. Mm-hmm. The problem runs to tens of thousands of soldiers.
And again, as an earlier caller highlighted, this apparently goes back a good many years, at least as far as Vietnam.
That's right. I've been getting calls from soldiers well beyond 2001 who said, this happened to me, and I'm so glad that finally someone's putting it in the spotlight.
Do we have... Well, let me ask you this. I'm not sure that if you got into the historical perspective of all of this, but at what point did we start treating post-traumatic stress disorder as an actual illness? Of course, we all recall the famous scene in the movie Patton where he slaps the soldier. There was a time, obviously, of course, when this whole thing was simply dismissed as cowardice or gold-breaking or what have you. Notwithstanding the fact that such things can occur, the fact is that many people genuinely suffer from this. Was it a post-World War II understanding of this that led to the diagnosis that there was really something wrong with these soldiers?
It was in recent decades. I know that there's now a medical understanding that PTSD isn't just a vague psychological understanding. It has to do with physical changes in the brain, the way it handles stress. A lot of these disorders that these soldiers show when coming back, they're really adaptive mechanisms when in the situation of war. It's only when they come back from war and are no longer in that environment that the obsessive demonstrations no longer become adaptive. They seem like shows of sickness. And that's why Bob Filner, who led the investigation to this on the House side, he wants to establish a de-boot camp where one would come back home and try to readjust with training on how to leave those adaptive techniques in Iraq. As it is, a lot of these soldiers are coming home with the same refusal to sleep, the same ability to not clean at all times. One of the soldiers I spoke to, he got his obsessive cleaning after having to wipe the blood and chunks of skull away from his vehicle after several of his friends had been killed, and he didn't want others in the unit to soak in that blood. Now that he's back home, he's been diagnosed with PTSD because he's obsessively cleaning. These are things that perhaps we can teach soldiers to leave in Iraq if we give them some counseling.
Mm-hmm. Have you had a chance to talk with many of the other 22,500 aside from Specialist John Town?
Well, yes. I've been speaking with dozens of these soldiers.
Presumably, some of them have been actually correctly diagnosed. I mean, there must be, I suppose, some pre-existing conditions. Or do you have any evidence of that at all? I mean, it does seem, granted, as we've discussed, kind of odd that these conditions suddenly pop up after at least two rather thorough military examinations of people, A, when they join the military, B, when they go into a combat zone. But having said that, do we have any reason to believe that they're all fraudulent?
Well, that's precisely the point. First, all the soldiers I've been researching, they all served in Iraq. So these are all people who passed those two health screenings. But what is difficult to understand until you really look at the issue is that the 513 personality disorder discharge is by definition a phony discharge. If any of these soldiers actually had personality disorder, they never would have made the rigorous screening to go into the Army. They never would have been accepted and so wouldn't need the discharge to get rid of them.
Interesting. Well, that, of course, does it not presuppose that the initial screenings, however thorough they may be, are infallible? I mean, I can assure you that the military doesn't mess around. It is for those back in the era when there was a draft hanging over people's heads, it was remarkable how hard it was to get in, quite frankly. But having said that, there have to be some cases in which the Army just messes up and it lets a few duds through the system.
That's possible. That certainly is possible. No one has been claiming the Army has achieved perfection in its processes. Mm-hmm. But the type of cases that we've been looking at here really show that this is something else altogether. It's more of a scam. Many of your listeners will be familiar with this, with insurance practices, the finding of pre-existing conditions. Mm-hmm. As a way not to pay.
Exactly, and the issue is not at all whether or not there is a pre-existing condition. The issue is to avoid paying out premiums by lying, cheating, by whatever it takes. Is that the mentality we're talking about here? Because let's face it, at least with an insurance company, however reprehensible that is and however much those executives deserve to be jailed, it is a profit-making institution. And while I don't agree with the motivation, I can understand the motivation. They're in business to make a profit. In this case, the military is not in the business of making a profit. The Veterans Administration is not in the business of making a profit. What's their motivation to lie and cheat?
It's a great point. You can really say this is just an expansion of the insurance practices to the military facilities. What is their motivation? Well, we talked about the $12.5 billion in disability and medical care that they're saving. But on a practical level, these hospitals are simply overrun. Nobody thought the war would go on.
Well, then maybe we need more hospitals. Maybe we need more doctors. Maybe we need more nurses. Maybe we need more of a lot of things. The idea that something is suddenly expensive, so we just ignore it. I mean, my God, this is the kind of behavior you would expect from an 8-year-old.
Well, and every time the VA and hospital budgets get cut, they're pressed into these kind of questions. Are they going to try to get rid of this person, or are they going to take the expense of treating them for several months to come? Sometimes they rule it's best to get the person out the side door and free up that hospital bed for the 6 or 7 soldiers who are waiting to take it.
Remarkable. We're going to come back and talk some more with Joshua Kors, focus in particular on the lawsuits. 1-866-50-JIMBO is our number, 1-866-505-4626. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Jimbo Hannon Show. We're at 1-866-50-JIMBO, 1-866-505-4626, and talking with journalist Joshua Kors, whose investigation into the treatment of our wounded troops in Iraq has led to a couple of reports now, the latest just out in The Nation magazine, in which, among other things, we learn about the thousands of veterans who have filed suit against the Veterans Administration. What is claimed in that suit?
They claim that they're not being diagnosed properly, not being treated in a timely manner, and not giving the disability or medical benefits that they deserve. It's a tough suit to file because it's really unprecedented, and right now the San Francisco law firm that filed that suit on behalf of John Towne and so many others is running into a lot of roadblocks. They are facing a court that's telling them they don't have the legal right to sue. They're appealing that decision, but we will see what happens. You know, Jim, before the break, we were talking about the Army's motivation. I think it's important to go back to that. We spoke about the billions of dollars at stake and about the practical aspect of discharging soldiers when your hospital is overrun. But we didn't get to the PR aspect of this as well, and that's very important.
Okay.
Many people are furious about the cost of this war, both the $150 billion that was approved by the Senate this past week and the thousands who are dying and are wounded. Well, when you say someone has a pre-existing condition, what you do is you take someone who was wounded in Iraq and you wipe them off the books. You take thousands of soldiers, tens of thousands really, who would be adding to that cost. And now that cost is gone because you said, well, they were injured before they went. It's a fantastic PR tool, a great way to keep these wounded soldiers out of the eye of the public.
But who, again, the motivation here just totally eludes me. I mean, who is willing to stand up and admit I'm lying and cheating and I am shafting the protectors of our nation? That just doesn't strike me as the mantle that most people would like to wrap themselves in.
No. It certainly doesn't. It's shameful behavior by any stretch of the imagination, and we'll see what happens when those people are called to account for it. As I mentioned, Surgeon General Gail Pollack refused to show at the congressional hearing. Perhaps she'll take a different approach as this story becomes higher and higher profile.
Can you say contempt of Congress? I knew you could. All right, Irvin, who is on the road near Davenport, Iowa tonight. Good evening, Irvin.
Good evening. How are you doing tonight?
We're well, thank you.
Yes, I'd like to ask your guest, has he ever checked into any other medical conditions from retiring or people getting out of the Army besides post-traumatic stress?
Well, what conditions were you talking about? What do you have in mind?
Well, I retired from the Army in 95, and I failed probably six or seven stress tests for my heart. And when I went into the morning, they said, they looked at me and said, oh, you're retiring? I said, yeah, I'm retiring. He says, well, went on a treadmill for about 3 minutes, and he said, oh, I don't see nothing wrong. And I'd already failed six tests.
What kind of you had already failed what, previous treadmill tests?
Right, treadmill tests and EKGs, you know.
Now, being in the military, I'm assuming that it was therefore a military doctor or a military clinic, since you would have little point at that stage to go out and hire a private doctor. So one military doctor says your heart isn't up to the task, and then another one says, oh, your heart's just fine?
Right. When I went in this is my retirement physical, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And I got on the treadmill. He said, yeah, he says, we was talking about retiring. He said, yeah, your heart's fine. You're good. And I know several soldiers that have had the same experience. And this is from Evans Army, by the way.
Was this an effort to try and deny to you certain benefits? I mean, you were just retiring. Were you retiring on disability based on your heart condition?
No. I had 21 years.
Well, that's interesting.
I think maybe what it is, it switches from the regular Army over to the VA, and then it's all VA's problem, you see. It's not the Army's problem now. It's VA's problem.
Yeah, but on the,
I can go to VA. I can go to VA and get and try and get reevaluated, right?
Yeah.
But I think it's more switching off from funding from one place to another place.
Well, perhaps so. Just as a follow up here before Mr. Kors responds. Wouldn't the payment to you still be the same either way? You're retiring.
Well, when I retired, the way the retirement worked was if you got disability, then they took away part of your retirement. So I'd had $500 worth of disability,
uh-huh.
And my retirement was $1,200. Well, my retirement would have been reduced to $700, and then they would have gave me $500 in disability.
So, in other words, yeah, I remember that, which was effectively telling people that if you wind up disabled in the service of your country, then you get shafted. Recruiters should be required by law to explain that to people they sign up. We're coming up on a break on the half hour here, but I'm curious, Joshua Kors, if you have anything here for Irvin.
I really don't, Irvin. I wish you the best with your retirement there. You do point out one interesting facet we haven't discussed, and that's getting things reevaluated by the VA. We talked before the absurdity of getting a Purple Heart and then having them say you weren't wounded in war. Well, you have the same thing with these dual systems. The Army provides one rating, and the VA provides one rating just months later. Jim, in so many cases, the Army says 0% disability, and the VA says 40 or 50% disability, yet we're talking about the same soldier.
Yeah, we're going to come back with some more here, including some more calls for Joshua Kors again, who has agreed to stay over with us here as we talk about our treatment of our wounded veterans. We'll be back here at Westwood One. Welcome back to the Jim Bohannon Show at 1-866-50-JIMBO, 1-866-50-54626. Freelance journalist Joshua Kors is continuing his investigation of those in the military who are being denied benefits, apparently because they're too expensive. They put their lives on the line. They have the gall to get wounded and actually acquire, therefore, expenses, which the country now seems reluctant to pay for. It's so inconvenient somehow. Here is Peter in Redding, Connecticut. Good evening.
Good evening. How are you guys doing?
We're fine, thank you.
You know, it seems to me there's a whole other side to this story that Mr. Kors is not bringing up, and that is the epidemic of soldiers claiming to have post-traumatic stress syndrome.
How do we know there's an epidemic of that?
Well, I'd ask your guest to say what are the increases in claims for post-traumatic stress syndrome in this war from previously.
All right. What about that?
You know, that I don't know. It's an interesting thought, and several of the doctors who spoke to me mentioned that as well, the idea that a lot of the soldiers who are coming to them want to get out fast. They don't want to go back to Iraq with their unit, and so the doctors are actually doing them a favor by saying, hey, you know you don't have personality disorder. Obviously, that's clear to me, too, but if you take this, you'll get out in a few days, and you won't have to go back to Iraq. Several doctors have suggested to me that's why they sign on, because it's a fast way to get out of going to Iraq, damn be the consequences.
Well, let me ask you this. Are there definitive ways to diagnose post-traumatic stress disorder? I mean, are we talking about something here amorphous that can be just tossed around when we wish to apply it or not? Or is it something like a broken arm or a case of typhoid that is either you got it or you ain't, and it is easy to diagnose?
Well, no. A post-traumatic stress disorder has very definite symptoms. The other problem with trying to locate it, though, is the amount of time doctors are now getting with soldiers. Some of them told me they get as little as 15 to a half an hour with a soldier to make a diagnosis. You could imagine a serious diagnosis like PTSD. You could barely sit down and say your name before they have to decide whether you have it or not. Right now, with so many soldiers and so few doctors, they're not getting much more time than that. And so the long weeks of counseling that one would need to really properly diagnose a serious condition like PTSD just aren't available for the soldiers nowadays.
All right, 1-866-50-JIMBO, 1-866-505-4626. Brian calls in from Fort Leonard Wood, Missouri. Hello, Brian.
Hello. I have a question for your guest.
Sure.
I hope things are all well. I've been hearing it all evening that it is. My question is this. In your research, in this duration of your research for this PTSD for soldiers, have you come across or been in contact with an organization of a private matter that supports, assists, or contributes to the benefit of these soldiers suffering from post-traumatic stress disorder?
A private organization?
A privately funded or an outside of government foundation.
Are you aware of such a group, or just asking as a general line of inquiry?
General line of inquiry,
okay.
Because I'd like to, if one does exist at this time, I would like to contribute to it.
Okay.
My wife is actually diagnosed post-traumatic stress disorder, and she's in the military now, and I'm out.
Interesting. Well, we'll come back and ask you about why you want to do that in a moment, but to the direct question, Joshua, are you aware of any private group which tries to address this issue, even though it is a government responsibility? Obviously, if there is such a group, that would be good.
There are. There are several groups who have been there for soldiers with PTSD, and specifically one that's been working very hard on addressing these situations with personality disorder discharges. That's Veterans for America, and the investigator, Andrew Pagani, has been working tirelessly on this issue for 2 years now. I was called to an organization just this past week. I addressed them in Washington, called Veterans and Military Families for Progress. And they're also trying to get behind this issue, working to make sure that Barack Obama's bill and Congressman Phil Hare's bill to freeze these discharges do get passed.
All right. In addition, Brian, I'm curious if you could tell us the circumstances of your wife's situation.
Briefly, she's been on two deployments, one of which was to Guantanamo Bay, Cuba.
Mm-hmm.
And she has suffered severely, actually, in my opinion. She's a different woman. She was treated briefly with cognitive treatment from a uncertified counselor, not a psychologist. However, she was monitored with 20 to 30 minute visits once a month with the person, the psychologist or psychiatrist, excuse me, I'm not
mm-hmm.
sure which.
Yeah.
But she had 30-minute visits with them once a month to assess whether or not the medication that they had her on was efficient. The medication pretty much turned her mind on and turned her mind off, literally. She has subsequently, many things have changed about her as her personality. And she just does the best she can. She's actually still in on active duty.
Interesting. And I gather that your inquiry about such a private group, and we may have one, by the way, which I'll give to you in just a second here, I gather your inquiry is based on your view that she is not going to get decent treatment by the government? I mean, I don't want to put words in your mouth, but that's hearing.
I completely concur that I am concerned that she will not receive that, because I can tell you this right now, she hasn't received it yet.
And how long has it been?
Since 2004.
3 years ought to be long enough, Joshua, wouldn't you think?
Yeah, Jim, if I may,
yes,
let me give you my email address.
JoshuaKors.com.
It's Joshua@JoshuaKors.com, KORS.
Okay, he gave it to me. It's www.joshua@.
No, for an email address, it would simply be joshua@joshuacores.com. And Joshua Kors is spelled J-O-S-H-U-A-K-O-R-S. Whereas the website is www.joshuacores.com.
You can write to me, and I'd be happy to connect you with folks who could help you and who are in your same shoes trying to deal with wounded spouses. But I'd add one more group to the list, and that's Veterans for Common Sense.
Veterans for Common Sense.
That's right. Paul Sullivan, the executive director of that organization, was the one who came up with the idea of doing that lawsuit. He brought in several soldiers to unite behind pursuing benefits through the legal system.
Okay.
And my producer came up with a group, veteransforamerica.org, veteransforamerica.org.
Yes, that was the very first one that Mr. Kors mentioned, actually.
Okay, all right. Then you got Veterans for America, and you've got Veterans for Common Sense. Might be two places to start.
And there's one other that I have found that works with this similarly, and that is HeartsTowardsHome.com.
HeartsTowardsHome.com. Okay.
Yes.
And I would note one thing also, too, and that is that where are you from originally? I know you're stationed at Fort Leonard Wood, or your wife is.
You're out.
So you are a private citizen living in Missouri.
My residence would be home here in Missouri, but I'm actually visiting home from Germany, where we're stationed.
that is to say, your wife is stationed, and you travel with her.
Correct, sir.
But in terms of being a citizen, you are a citizen of the state of Missouri.
Yes.
That's my point. In view of the fact that Missouri Senator Kit Bond happens to be key on this bill, you might think about contacting Senator Bond regarding this particular problem.
Okay.
Okay?
I will definitely do that. We've been looking into the proper format in which to approach instead of just complaining.
Well,
we want to be heard.
I understand that you want to be heard, although in your particular case, it sounds as though you have a legitimate basis for complaining.
I agree.
I think another key aspect here, and John Towne himself has been trying to get active in helping other soldiers navigate the system. It's very complicated, especially when you have physical and psychological issues to deal with coming back from Iraq. Learning to navigate the veterans benefits system is a whole nother jungle.
It's part of the black bag, sir.
What's that?
It's part of the black bag. Keep them in the dark, and they can't bother us.
Well, perhaps so. The people at the Veterans and Military Families for Progress were in your shoes, and they spoke at length about the difficulties treating spouses who were going through this, how to stick by them, how to help them pursue benefits. I think contacting the members of that organization would also be a great help to you. I'd be happy to connect you or anybody else in the audience who wants to be linked with one of these organizations. I'd be happy to share my contacts.
And I don't mind supporting that organization financially or volunteering. So that's something I'm looking forward to doing in the near future.
There's a real spreading awareness that the soldiers who've been falsely diagnosed with personality disorder, and even those who were just coming home with traumatic brain injury and post-traumatic stress disorder, aren't getting the care they need. As we've mentioned before, the stack of cases waiting to be treated at the VA is tall. And as those cases wait to be processed, we have a lot of soldiers, a lot of wives and husbands who are lingering without medical help.
Yes.
All right. Good luck to you, Brian. We have some
more
calls to take when we come back. And again, the particular groups that have just been mentioned here are both .org groups. That is to say, veteransforamerica.org, veteransforcommonsense.org. We'll be back with more from Joshua Kors in just a moment. It would be the Jim Bohannon Show. We're talking with Joshua Kors, the journalist who has put together this incredible story of the way in which our government is treating our wounded veterans. This is Joe calling in from Fayetteville, North Carolina. Good evening.
Yes, sir. I just have a slight question for you. How did the government treat the Vietnam vets on Agent Orange? Denial, and then eventually they're all dead and gone, and we'll give you a stipend. Has anybody correlated how the government treats all of its veterans, or just the sick veterans, or just the ones that may or may not care about their health?
This weekend, when I spoke at the Veterans Convention in Washington, one of the soldiers there gave me a book he had written about his own experience with Agent Orange and said that personality disorder scandal is just part two of the same story.
And what are we going to do about it as veterans?
Well,
what can we do about it?
Get organized. Use your clout. You vote. Get organized with your members of Congress. But anyway, I interrupted Josh.
No, I'm sorry. That's all right. Anybody can answer. You know,
you're making the
old don't want to know.
What you can do is make sure that your congressman knows about these personality disorder bills and that they're out there supporting it.
They've been informed.
Well, pardon?
They've been informed. They just ignore us.
It's possible. You know, Jim, the other
Joe.
Aspect here is media organizations. We talk about the government. Are they listening? Are they not? I've been getting flooded with phone calls from media, television, radio, newspapers across the country. All of them want to tell the soldiers' stories as well. That'd be a positive avenue for soldiers to approach if they want to get their story out. The idea is eventually to make the veterans' voices so loud that nobody can avoid this personality disorder story anymore.
Well, one can certainly hope so, and best to Joe, and best to all of the people out there so affected. I certainly thank you very much for being with us tonight, Joshua. It's an amazing story.
Thank you, Jim.
Thank you very, very much. All right, Joshua Kors. And again, he is the man who has brought us the story of Army Specialist John Towne, injured in Iraq, denied benefits when he was given a diagnosis of a previously unknown personality disorder, which certainly should have appeared in the many, many ways in which the military checks out to see if you are, in fact, good enough to do the job. He is one of thousands of veterans who have filed suit against the Veterans Administration, claiming mistreatment on numerous fronts, a suit that contends that the VA failed to provide prompt disability benefits, failed to add staff to reduce wait times for medical care, and failed to provide prompt disability benefits, failing to add the staff to reduce the wait time for medical care, and failed to improve practice services for this war's main problem, of course, the post-traumatic stress disorder. The lawsuit accuses the VA of deliberately cheating some veterans, such as Specialist Towne, by working with the Pentagon to misclassify post-traumatic stress disorder claims as pre-existing personality disorders to avoid paying benefits. It is dishonest. It is beneath contempt.